Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. There was a relative calm in financial markets during the holiday shortened week, but there was still important news regarding the Fed, of course, the economy and corporate earnings, and there will surely be more news this week that could cause market volatility. So with that, joining us once again here in studio, glad to welcome back Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, Jason Dreho. Jason, welcome back from the holiday weekend.
Good morning, Dan. Hey, happy Monday. Yeah, nice to be back after a long weekend, a nice warm long weekend here in the Northeast.
Definitely. Glad that the warm temperatures have finally set in here in the New York area. So, all right, let's begin, Jason, beginning with the fact that the relative calm last week was because there wasn't a lot of incremental tariff news, although sometimes no news is news in itself. So with that, Jason, what are you watching for as market-relevant tariff news in the coming weeks?
Well, I think what I'm watching for and what the markets and investors are watching for is signs of progress on any sort of deals with between the U.S. and other countries. You know, the whole point of having a 90-day reprieve on the tariffs, the incremental reciprocal tariffs, is that it does provide a chance for negotiations. And so it's only been about 10 days, but now it's sort of silently. Let's see some evidence of that happening. Now, this week on Thursday, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent is supposed to meet with officials from Japan and Korea. So, you know, first kind of signs of actual, you know, meetings to sort of move, you know, forward. How much and what would they expect to be announced? I think that maybe we need to kind of temper expectations. You know, trade deals often take many months, if not years, to negotiate. We're not going to get, you know, concrete results in a couple of days. But that's something that the markets will want to see, some signs that progress has been made. A week from today, so on April 28th, there's a federal election in Canada. You know, depending on how that, you know, plays out, it's quite possible we could see negotiations between Canada, the U.S., and Mexico as part of the USMCA, you know, trade agreement. We negotiations to begin sooner. We could see a meeting of you know, the various presidents, prime ministers in, say, in D.C. That would, again, be maybe a sign that it could be a de-escalation for the tariffs that were put on place, you know, certainly before other countries. So this is what I think investors this week and the coming weeks will need to see, is, you know, signs that, you know, this pause is actually leading to negotiations that will either, you know, reduce the tariffs or certainly avoid those reciprocal tariffs ever being put into place. And anything that also takes place on fiscal matters regarding like the budget reconciliation process could be indirectly important, because depending on where that's coming out in terms of tax increases, tax cuts, spending cuts, or not, that might incentivize the, you know, Trump, the administration, to press ahead further with tariffs to raise revenue, or vice versa, maybe to reduce tariffs. So that is a sort of secondary thing to watch for. But now basically the bottom line is, we're assuming we're probably not going to see a lot of new tariff levels being introduced in the next couple of weeks. It's more about like the negotiations, and that's what investors want to see, because if we go a month or 2 months and there's no progress, then of course the concern is like, well, you know, what will happen from there? And the markets don't want that uncertainty.
So outside of tariffs, Jason, and of course, we'll keep our eyes open for further developments on that front this week, though last week, the Fed was also in focus, although not necessarily for anything that they did. Chairman Jay Powell did speak last week at the Economic Club of Chicago. He also came under criticism from President Trump. We know that the Fed is an apolitical institution. So based on those comments by President Trump, Jason, how do you expect the Fed to approach cutting rates?
Well, let's leave the politics aside and say, like, you know, given what the Fed knows in terms of the state of the economy, what the tariffs have been announced and could, you know, will go into place and could go into place, the question is, what does the Fed do? And it's not an easy situation, because tariffs, you know, will directionally cause inflation to go higher, at least in the, you know, temporarily and in the short term, and also will be a drag on growth in the economy. The message from Chair Powell last week during his prepared comments and sort of Q&A, but also other senior Fed officials, including Governor Chris Waller, all kind of, you know, are giving the same consistent message, is that they basically feel like, you know, policy, current policy is appropriate given the risks that are two-sided for higher inflation, but also slower growth and a weaker job market. And if basically, i.e., there are no real rush to cut rates. They want to see how this will play out before making any kind of decisions. You know, it is a challenge if inflation is going higher. And so for them to justify cuts, you know, then you need to see weakness in the labor market. So thinking in terms of more of the unemployment rate, which is currently 4.2% on a kind of rounded basis, that has to go higher, you know, 4.4%, 4.5%, you know, could get them to act. We saw that in 2024. when the inflation rate was, or the unemployment rate was continually rising, and when it actually rose upwards of 90 basis points, that really was the catalyst for the Fed to cut 50 basis points in September. So I think the Fed, you know, all indications are that they would basically believe if, even if inflation is going higher, ultimately the drag on growth will bring inflation down, and therefore they'd be proactive and start cutting rates. But we don't see that yet in sort of the labor market data, which is why market pricing has a little over 10% probability for a cut in a couple of weeks in the May meeting. Only about 75% chance of a cut in June, mid-June. So even with two more months of labor market data, market's still not saying it's likely. But if we look at December, the market pricing is still around 3.6 cuts for this year. So what it's doing is basically backloading, and the market's sort of saying, we just need to see weaker labor market data before the Fed is, you know, can cut. That may not make the administration and President Trump happy, given what he said last week. I can't believe the exact term that he used, slowpoke. Was it something like that to describe?
I don't think he's happy with how he's been handling
policy. He basically wants them to be cutting more aggressively. Right. Now, and this is then raising the question about sort of Fed independence. And even there's reports from yesterday that a senior economic advisor, Kevin Hassert, said they're looking into, like, you know, legally what they can do to remove a Fed chair. Current law says it's not that easy. The whole point is to be independent from political influence. You can't just fire a Fed chair just because you're unhappy with interest rates.
Right.
There has to be some sort of cause. I believe there is a, you know, likely court challenge, not just for the Fed, but other senior like officials. Like, what discretion does the president have to remove people in roles like that? And that could be determined and decided by the Supreme Court by the before the recess in June. So something that could be hanging over the markets, you know, throughout the summer. I would say that you have to be careful what you wish for in this case, because if you're the president and you know, could fire them, what we already see, and we're seeing this on Monday morning, where the dollars continue to weaken. You see the back end of the curve, the treasury rates, the 10-year, the 30-year, up 7-8 basis points. The reason that there's independence is that, you know, policymakers and politicians in particular always want the economy, or they're going to have a bias to wanting the economy to be strong. They're willing to sacrifice, you know, job growth now for maybe higher inflation later on, because they won't be in office. It won't be their problem. This is the point of having the independence. The market gets that. So if you cut rates now, or if you push for the Fed cutting rates, well, the implications are it means maybe higher inflation later on, which is why the 10-year, the 30-year go up. You're pricing in a greater risk premium. It also means the dollar sort of weakens because of these concerns about, could you have a more inflationary policy going forward? Equity markets, risk assets also sell off. So yeah, maybe you can get the Fed to cut rates, but if everything else decreases in value, if rates go higher, you actually could end up being worse off overall.
And the chairman's term is up sometime in 2026, so he does have some runway ahead of him.
I believe it's May of 2026.
Yep, so about a year.
About a year. Now, the administration and all presidents, they will announce at least a few months, maybe in this case 6 months before, who that will replace Chair Powell. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has already said, like, looking at sort of maybe the fourth quarter, like October, November timeframe. There's also been some speculation, even I think by Bessent a while ago, of could they appoint a shadow chair, like this is the person in waiting who will take over, do it by the summer. That person can be out there in the media talking about it, giving guidance, of course, not actually having influence, not being on the policy setting committee. Again, those things kind of the same vein of like, okay, you can do this, but does it just create noise for the markets and uncertainty? And again, sort of counterproductive. Not saying they won't do that. You know, one could argue that tariffs are not necessarily the most productive economic activity, but you know, this is something that's on the table. The markets, you know, will not like that. And that's what we're seeing already again, you know, in recent weeks. But in particular, today is a sign of like, well, if you go down that path, then we just have to derate U.S. assets.
So let's take the temperature a bit on the state of the U.S. economy. I know last week, Jason, we had data on retail sales, industrial production. On top of that, the Q1 earnings season well underway at this point has thus far offered some color on the state of the economy. So how would you say, Jason, the economy is performing, and what is your outlook at this time?
Well, if we look at the actual kind of hard activity data, it's held up reasonably well. What continues to deteriorate significantly is the sentiment. Surveys of how do you feel, what are your expectations, all that is dropping, you know, very significantly, you know, the lowest levels we've seen, you know, now it's kind of almost going back to the depths of the pandemic. But even with the real activity holding up, whether it is, you know, retail sales for March ended up being, or relatively okay. Prior revisions were upgraded. Prior months were revised higher. Industrial production is pretty good. labor market, job layoffs remain low. So all relatively positive. From the market's perspective, though, they would say this is kind of backward looking. It's also maybe distorted by, you know, businesses, consumers front loading or front running tariffs. So people are buying in the anticipation of tariffs are going to go up, prices are going to go up. So I want to buy autos now, buy other goods now. Same thing with businesses sort of importing goods before those tariffs take effect. So it's actually overstating the strength of the economy because it's, you know, people are doing a lot now and then you'll get a sharp kind of drop off later on. If we look north of the border to Canada, where the tariff impact is, will be greater and has already kind of started to matter just because they came in sooner. The activity data for March actually dropped off, you know, quite a bit. So if that's sort of the canary in the coal mine, what we see there could start to filter not only in the U.S., but of course, other parts of the world. You know, Korea, as an example, it's often looked at in terms of exports because it's an export nation. And preliminary data for April suggests, you know, a decent decline already in, you know, sort of exports there. So this is sort of in the pipeline. It may not be evident in the data until we get it really in June for May data. It may not even really be obvious, that obvious so far in April data. But I think this is an expectation. You're going to see some, you know, deterioration of economic activity going forward to start to perhaps catch up at least a little bit with the sentiment. On the earnings itself, it's still early in the earnings season for Q1. We've had about 13% of the S&P 500 market cap report. A lot of that is skewed towards, you know, financials like some of the bigger banks. If there was a takeaway from it, it's just uncertainty. It's hard to give guidance. So the results, if you look at relative expectations for revenues and for sales, you know, they're beating, but not by the typical rate. So it's a little bit softer in that regards. But in some way, that's also backward looking. And companies are kind of struggling to give, you know, comprehensive guidance because they just don't know. And I think United, the CEO of United, sort of saying we have two different guidance, recession and non-recession, kind of speaks to the reality of, like, you know, if we get a recession, it's going to be X. And if it's going to be no recession, Y. But we don't know what it is. And that's kind of where we are now. So that's what investors are looking for. And it's a little bit backward looking. So I think, you know, the markets are pricing idiosyncratic individual stocks on a relative basis, okay, but as a read for the economy, mm-hmm. there's probably not a lot we can necessarily take away just because it doesn't tell us where we're going.
So the markets thus far, if you look back last week, Jason, seem to be taking this all in stride, at least for now, though that, of course, is all relative. So how do you interpret the latest market pricing and how might conditions evolve from here?
Well, if we kind of think back over the past few weeks of how things have materialized, we saw, you know, of course, the significant sell-off for risk assets post the Liberation Day tariff announcement on April 2nd. And then, of course, the reprieve, you know, on April 9th of the 90-day delay for the tariffs brought, a sizable rally. But since then, we saw, at least for the S&P overall, a little bit of weakness last week. It was down 1.5%, which, considering the huge moves the prior week, was still modest. Other parts of the equity markets, like small caps, are actually up last week. So again, a little bit more sort of, you know, stabilization, where we're getting probably some churn in terms of the overall sort of, you know, positioning. The volatility index, like the VIX, for equities, the move for treasuries, they decline. So again, a little bit more, you know, kind of stability. But what we're seeing this morning, on Monday morning, is, you know, equity futures are down, rates higher, the dollar lower. This goes back to kind of the concerns about the Fed and sort of speaks to, if we have now, you know, that uncertainty potentially lingering in the background, the tariff uncertainty, it's just going to be an environment where things are kind of continues to be very choppy, very volatile. And on just the U.S. exceptionalism kind of story, you know, that's being questioned, and the Fed independence is sort of part of that. Perhaps the cleanest way to play that is the dollar kind of going lower. And that's what we'll probably see further sort of, at least challenges there. If this is, you know, whether it's tariffs, whether it's the Fed, that's going to probably be the most directly impacted. But that has a broad sort of knock-on effect for other asset classes of just, you know, being challenged in this environment until we get more clarity and stability of where we go from here.
So let's expand on that a bit further as we begin to close out, maybe talk about some guidance, Jason, when it comes to asset allocation for this current uncertain environment. What can investors do to navigate this ongoing volatility in markets?
Well, it's important to distinguish between the next, you know, 2-3 weeks, 2-3 months, and, like, you know, next, you know, 6-12 months. Because I think over this next 6 or 12 months, certainly sort of on, like, you know, the longer horizon, you know, I think still relatively constructive on risk assets, you know, given what we expect will happen with tariffs, which again, we'll get deals at the full, you know, these tariffs won't be fully implemented. They still think the U.S. will avoid kind of, you know, recession or, like, you know, get in the nuance of technical recession, but a better story was we move into 2026. But to kind of get there, of course, it's choppiness, it's volatility. And so the way we kind of, you know, would think of it is that, in this volatile period, you can sort of certainly, be a little bit defensive, but also I'd say, prepare to be sort of, take offense in this case. So for example, for equities on a 12-month horizon, even to year end, relatively constructive of how things will kind of play out, but in the near term will be kind of choppy. Anytime there's sort of pullbacks in the market, have a playbook ready to, to put the cash to work, sort of phase into adding back to equities if you've been waiting to allocate cash, if you've actually de-risked already. So that's something just to sort of think about, like how about sort of your target levels. To me, like 5,000 on the S&P, now you're down almost 20% from peak. That's a pretty decent entry level, to kind of be adding some exposure. Where to add? Well, things that have been sort of, the bigger sell-offs this year, like tech has been, or had been the worst performing sector. Ultimately, we think that fundamental story, which is less macro dependence, more AI and investment, kind of led, still has, a strong kind of component to it. So your areas like that to consider. A little more strategically, thinking about global diversification, it's something we always advocate for. We know within the U.S., at least a lot of investors have a very strong home bias because of this U.S. exceptionalism story. But between, kind of a catch down from the U.S. performance, the weaker U.S. dollar, on a relative basis, international markets can look, relatively sort of attractive if you are under allocated, right? In the near term, we think U.S. is an attractive market on a medium term horizon. But just thinking about, having sort of making sure you have that global sort of allocation, global, diversification. On interest rates, and fixed income overall, stay up in quality. The spreads have kind of tightened a little bit, after the tariff reprieve, but they're still, historically they're not close to pricing in a recession at all. And interest rates, could be very kind of fluctuate. And what we're seeing today at the back of the curve, the 10-year up 7 basis points. If you're worried about inflation, if you're worried about Fed independence, those rates are going higher. So we don't advocate, taking a lot of duration risk, staying, in the front end of the curve at this point in time, because they'll probably be at better entry points. Gold continues to be an asset class that just sort of keeps delivering, and we now have a 3,500 price target for gold. So that continues to go, higher, and we're seeing gold as of
even this morning.
Even this morning as a safe haven, as a diversifier for the dollar. Again, sort of gold, still has some runway. And the final thing is an environment where if rates are going higher, equities are selling off. How do you have that diversification in your portfolio? We've seen alternatives and say hedge fund strategies have been a good diversifier. They've been outperforming this year. So as a way to just diversify portfolios to give you return streams that have low or negative correlation with equities when bonds aren't sort of providing the diversification. That's more of a strategic view. But if this is the environment we're going to be playing in going forward, I think that's a good chance that this is not an anomaly. This is more reflective like what the macro policy environment will be like for the time being. Having that diversification for other means is nothing to kind of think about as well.
So a lot of considerations out there when it comes to positioning for this current environment. So Jason, as always, thank you for dropping by on a Monday morning to touch base on what's moving markets, what to look out for in the week ahead, and of course, guidance when it comes to positioning one's portfolio. Thank you, Jason.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
You as well. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights, at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.